afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
You should have seen how fast he gets to that microphone, too. He's like lightning fast right there. Sometimes I do wish like there was a camera in here. We could just get little like snippets, you know.
Oh, it was great. We were playing musical microphones earlier.
Oh, that's always nice. Yeah, because everything seems to be like working fine, huh? Well, that's always confusing. So, thanks to our sponsors, and our sponsor today is Powerhouse Solar.
Powerhouse Solar.
Bill, do you? Yep. What's with the hand rubbing?
I'm cold.
Like, is there something we should know?
I'm giddy. Bill's Every morning I wake up and rub my hands together.
Bill's got a tick. He's got a new tick. Maybe we should.
I just haven't been the same since January 20th. I'm sorry. I just.
I know everybody's still like dancing and prancing, and I know. Yeah. All the people that I usually run into that are so frustrated and upset, they're frustrated and upset about the things that are still going on, you know, the trying to take out the dams and all that stuff. But boy, when it comes to the broader political scope,
yes,
happiness.
Every day is a new day.
All right, so let me finish my work here. This was supposed to be your work, the sponsor work.
Oh, yeah. Powerhouse Solar. Bruce and Sue Blake. Number one guys in running for solar. If you want to, if you need solar panels or need to put in a solar system, they're the guys to go to.
Or you just want to know how it works. Because we had them come to our house one time and just tell us.
Oh, yeah.
Like how it might work, what it might do for us, you know, what were our choices.
Yep. Very professional. They'll put a whole program together for you, show you how much you'll save, and so forth. So, yeah, give them a call. 530-275-5600. Powerhouse Solar.
Correcto.
There you go.
Look at that. Got the hang of this now. And our guest. Okay, so let's speed over to the guest part because this is, you know, we hear a lot about what's going on college campuses, right? We're always hearing about the millennials, this and that and the other thing. And I don't know about everybody else, but I don't traffic in that circle anymore. I'm done with college and done with college by about, I don't know, 30 years, maybe 25, something like that. So I'm hearing this stuff that's happening on college campuses with puppy rooms and movies that, you know, and Play-Doh and safe spaces and all this stuff. And I think the danger is that we think everybody's lost their mind on the college campus. It sounds like it's a vast majority, but I was.
Yeah, you don't hear a whole lot of good stuff coming out of the college campuses today.
I was cruising through Twitter, though.
Scary stuff.
And I saw an article. Berkeley College Republican members allegedly hounded for political views. And I was like, well, if you're going to go to the extreme, you know, kind of crazy left, Berkeley pops to in my mind. And I was like, they have college Republicans there? That's pretty awesome. So I clicked on it. And I found our new best friend, Peter Van Voorhis, who's on with us today, and he's going to give us the behind-the-scenes scoop on what's really happening. And I know nothing other than that about Peter, so he'll have to tell us. That's all I know about you, is you can use Twitter, and so can I.
How are you, Peter?
I'm doing excellent. How are you guys doing today?
And you're kind of a, let's see, what would you be, a mastodon? You're almost the last of your of your species.
That's true. All three of us college Republicans left.
I was going to ask you how many there were. It's three?
Yeah, well, so I actually just wrote the article on the UC Berkeley Republicans. I actually go to UC Irvine.
I noticed that your other articles were about your Irvine. I thought, well, you must do a lot of traveling or something.
Yeah, no, I go to UC Irvine, and I formerly was a member of the College Republicans there. So, I do a lot on various campus issues all around Orange County where I live, and then also across the country, just really trying to expose what's actually going on. And so, you know, thank you all for having me on today. I really appreciate it and look forward to telling your listeners a little bit about the insanity that I get to go through. So we'll have fun doing it.
Yeah. I can only imagine. You know, we hear all these horror stories about college professors and some of their antics. And it doesn't sound like a real, pardon the pun, safe place if you're a Republican or a conservative. It sounds
Dangerous. Downright weird.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely very difficult to be a college Republican on campus, or just a conservative in general, because I think, you know, we all know about the left. They really, you know, claim to be tolerant of all ideas, but really they're tolerant only of all ideas that they agree with. So unfortunately, if you happen to not hold those same views, you're automatically, you know, racist, sexist, all those different things. But, you know, you just got to kind of learn to let them sort of brush over you and just kind of not pay attention to them and just keep going the course. And that's what we always try and do.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting that, you know, Berkeley is the, you know, the so-called home of free speech, and yet you say something that they don't agree with there now, and all of a sudden it's not so free. I find that very interesting.
Yeah, Bill, I mean, that was what I found so ironic about this story, and that was why I was so excited to write it when one of my buddies up at Berkeley told me about it, because, you know, part of the story does deal with, or the story talks about a few different events, basically talking about how it's very hard to be a Republican, or a college Republican specifically, at UC Berkeley. But what I found most ironic about it was there was a part of the story where there was a video where members of the college Republicans actually caught some campus leftists ripping down various pro-Trump posters that they had put up. But what was really funny about that is it was actually in Sproul Plaza, which is where the entire American college free speech movement started about 50 years ago. So it really shows how the left has gone from very much supporting free speech and being the proponents of that in the 1960s to suddenly right now in 2016, 2017, they're totally anti-free speech. So it's just, that was a very, very stark contrast to me.
That's just sad. And they were, I think part of your article was they were planning on canceling classes.
Yeah.
They were having like their boycott or whatever.
Yeah, that was actually at UC Irvine and actually at a lot of schools across the country. I wrote an article for Campus Reform on that, and I also did an opinion piece for the Daily Wire just kind of on my thoughts on that. But specifically at UCI, there were two separate professors that I found out about. I'm sure there were dozens more, but the two that I found out about, they actually canceled class, not only to allow their students to go protest, but actually encouraging students to protest and actually... sorry about that. Roommate just walked by.
Gilbert.
Trying to think what I was going for again. So they canceled class, and they actually were out there protesting themselves with their student, and they said to come over and say hi during the protest. So it's just, it's gotten to the point where, you know, you have these professors, they're really not for education. They really just want to indoctrinate their students, and it's the point where it's just, it's insane.
Yeah, I as a parent, I would really be thrilled that I'm paying my kids' tuition and they cancel classes to protest. That's nuts. It's just crazy.
Well, you interviewed, maybe when we come back from the break, I want to look up the article. Which one was it? We've added four articles from you. It was a professor. Was it the College Fix or Campus Reform that was about the professor?
It was at Campus Reform that was about the professor, and also an opinion piece on that for the Daily Wire.
Yeah, that was terrific. And I thought, well, you know, if more of them were like that guy, maybe we wouldn't be having this. But let's chat about how you found him. He seemed almost like a needle in a haystack when we come right back with our guest, Peter Van Voorhis. He's down at UC Irvine here. I've lied to everyone. I told him you were at Berkeley. But... he wrote an article about Berkeley. Berkeley was involved. I wasn't completely
crazy. That's right.
I wasn't completely
crazy.
You didn't
make the whole thing up. There was a sliver of truth in there. You're a professional journalist.
Hey, I could be a professional journalist. Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking. You're listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Don't tell me cause.
words are weapons now. Peter, how do you, on a day-to-day level, do you have to use all these, you can't say his and hers and all that at your school?
Yeah, I mean, they haven't, at UC Irvine at least, gone that crazy. There's definitely a contingency of professors who, you know, would want their students to always use the correct pronouns. But I'm actually a finance major, so luckily we don't have too much of that. But in the few kind of general ed classes, you know, blank studies, whether it's gender studies or, you know, whatever other type of very liberal courses, yeah, there's professors who absolutely want that.
Now, does Irvine have, safe spaces or freedom of speech zones, or, you know, do they do all that too?
They do. I haven't been to them myself just because I can't really fathom the thought of being in a safe space. But, for example, after the walkout that they did last Friday, but on Inauguration Day, when all the students and professors walked out of class, afterwards they went to a safe space where they said specifically, you know, that all ideas would be tolerated. But obviously, of course, they did not mean if someone was a conservative or a Republican or a Trump supporter or anything to do with that. So
yeah, what would happen if you...
What they call safe spaces and healing spaces and all of that crap here, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What would happen if you'd have shown up in a safe space and you were a conservative and you were happy? I mean, would they, like, throw you out?
I don't know. I would assume so. I mean, I certainly think if you walked in with a Make America Great Again hat on, that would not go over well. I think if you just stood in the back and didn't say anything, they would have no idea. But certainly if you piped up and said, hey, you know, I disagree with what you're saying, you would definitely be shouted out of the room. Not a doubt in my mind.
Mm.
And are they really this, I guess, you know, are they as dramatic as it sounds like they are about all this?
You know, it's actually worse.
Oh, God. I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, it's, you know, and you have to understand there's a small contingency of these very, very, very leftist students on campus. Not all of the kids on campus are bad. I think in general, there's a lot of students who are apathetic, and there's a good amount of students who are, you know, somewhat left-wing, and there's, you know, a few that are on kind of more of the right side of the spectrum. But the problem is the hyper-liberal contingency, whether that's professors, students, administrators, they tend to really dominate the narrative. You know, the average just person who's like, yeah, you know, I don't really like Trump, I kind of like Hillary, whatever, they're not the type to go out and protest, so they don't cause any attention, or they don't draw any attention to themselves. Whereas, you know, the people that are on the hyper left, aka the people who walk out of class, say the election's illegitimate and stuff like that, they're the ones who everyone's paying attention to. So in that sense, it is much worse, because they're the ones that are really shaping the campus climate.
Mm.
Yeah, and for some reason, there don't seem to be any adults in the room, you know, who say, look, get over it, move on, you're here to get an education.
Yeah, you certainly don't hear about it.
Of course, because they'd be shouted out of the room. You know, I mean, these people do not want to listen. That's the fundamental difference. I think not everyone, but I think most people on the right side of the political spectrum, they're willing to hear opposing ideas. We may not agree with them, but we're willing to hear you out if you have a liberal idea. Unfortunately, on the left, what they do is they claim the moral high ground. They say, if you don't agree with us, you're racist, you're sexist, you're a bigot, you're whatever else they come up with.
You must be silenced.
You must be silenced.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It is impossible to have a discussion with them. Trust me, I've tried. I spent my entire freshman year trying to have conversations with people, and it just didn't work. And at the end of the day, all you can do is really expose what they're doing, which is why, you know, I do all this writing. And at the end of the day, just put out your opinion as well.
Yeah, and I really hope people will go to the website where we have a little cluster of articles, and if you send me others, I'll post them. But you're really, I was an English teacher at the beginning of my career path when I went to Humboldt State. Good grief, the craziest liberal.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't that bad back then. I mean, I went there in 1979, and you had the, you know, as we referred to them, the hair legs, but.
Yeah.
So you had that. Bob, did you go there or your wife just went there?
My wife went there.
Yeah, our forest supervisor up here on the Shasta Trinity National Forest, he went there. We all seemed to be pretty normal. There was always a weirdo set. You know, there was the hacky sack people in the quad that, you know, you kind of picture. But we didn't hang out with them. And I guess most of my classes were, I don't know, the professors were just sort of teaching their classes. they weren't all involved in this political, or I should say hyper-partisan, because it's not really political. It's just kind of a weird hyper-partisanship. This man that you found, though, this professor, Jonathan Roth, he's at ROTH of San Jose State. I thought
that's
your
correct.
Article on him that's labeled thecollegefix.com is the place where it is. And liberal professor slams campus echo chambers, academic ideologies, and the intolerant left. But he is really the left. He's just, I thought he did a good job of distinguishing. Did you go meet with the guy? What was he like?
So I didn't meet with him because obviously I didn't want to fly all the way up to San Jose. But you know, we had a pretty long conversation and we'd been corresponding for weeks on this. And what I thought was fascinating is here you have someone. Well, first of all, we're going to want to distinguish between liberal and the left.
Correct.
While many on the left claim the liberal label, I would say that most of them, they're not actually liberal, because liberals, at least traditionally, are, you know, very open to new ideas, willing to have a discussion, whereas
sure.
the left, or the radical left specifically, they're the ones that try and shut down opposing points of view.
Yeah, I'm glad,
I just want to,
I'm glad you point that out, because that's a great point. There is a difference.
Yeah, so that's what we're really talking about here. But what I found fascinating with Professor Roth is he is someone who is a liberal through and through. You know, although he does hold somewhat conservative positions on, you know, Israel and a few other things like that, but generally, you know, very much someone that considers himself to be a liberal and acts like a liberal, but he's actually fighting to bring conservative speakers to campus and bring more conservative professors onto staff, because he recognizes that the point of, and I believe he's quoted as saying something like this in the article. He says, you know, essentially, intellectual diversity is so critical to the academic mission, because originally, you know, the point of a university was not to change the world necessarily, it was to interpret the world and learn about it and prepare people to go out into the world. But
sure, you have to hear both sides of the argument, and you can't shut down one side and then, you know, walk away with an education that's well-rounded. It doesn't work that way.
That's correct. And what happens with conservative students, I mean, I have certainly been challenged in my beliefs, and I think I'm stronger in my conservative beliefs because I've had them challenged. But what happens, unfortunately, is you get these, you know, liberal students or leftist students, however you want to classify them, who come into college, and then what happens is, you know, they never have their views challenged. They just sit there and they hear the same thing over and over again. It would be like if I went to college and I only heard conservative points of view. I wouldn't know anything. I would go out in the real world and I wouldn't know how to defend that.
Right.
That's the same thing that's happening with these liberal students. So you're really, in doing so, you're denying them an education is what
right.
you're doing.
In that article with Professor Ross, you have a picture of a sign that I think is pretty poignant. We condemn freedom of speech that hurts other people's feelings.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, is that what it's
like,
really about?
Let's unpack that. And that just doesn't make any sense.
No.
Well, a lot of those folks are, you know, they're really easy pickings going forward. The interesting part is the radical left, or however we want to call it, that the intolerant left, when they are keeping young people of, you know, whether they're high school or college age, when they're keeping them in that echo chamber of just one thing, the bad part is if those people ever are exposed to different ideas, I mean, you run the risk
they fall apart. We see that now in these big rallies when you get one of them that's being actually challenged by somebody on the right. They have their talking points for about the first couple of minutes, and then they're completely stumped. They don't know how to handle
because a
true argument. They can't.
They've never done it.
They aren't prepared.
That's absolutely correct. And what they do is then suddenly when they realize they're backed into a corner and none of their arguments are logical, because they're not really logical arguments. Obviously, we all know that if, you know, we're on the right, we certainly feel that way. Then they just start throwing insults is what they
exactly.
do. Exactly. You're racist, you know, all that stuff.
The name calling comes out.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I think that going forward, if you run this out, these are the people, you know, you look at who gets involved with the cult, who gets involved with just the human nature side of it. And if you're fed one thing and one thing only, and you never, that expression, steel sharpens steel, You know, if you never sharpen your steel, your ideas on anybody who opposes you, you're really at a tremendous risk for flipping and being absolutely anti everything you stood for. So these guys are literally creating their own opposition potentially going forward.
That's correct. And unfortunately, because they are embracing a liberal worldview, you know, in college they're taught, oh, you're so special. Oh, you don't like this idea? Great. We're going to ban that guy and, you know, you can go into your safe space. They get out in the real world and they try and get a job.
Exactly.
I mean, what are they going to say? Oh, I'm offended?
Yeah, exactly. They get in the real world and then that hits them in the face and there is no safe space. They're outnumbered. They're outgunned.
You look at it with children who ask all sorts of questions. They're not politically correct. They want to know. And here these guys can't help them because they've never thought about it. You know,
correct.
Erasing that side of the universe was the goal, but it's never going to happen. I just wonder how many of them, you know, I guess Horowitz, what's his name?
David Horowitz
springs to mind.
Yeah,
as someone who kind of went, wait a second, what are they saying? Well, hold on, that makes some sense, and then becomes their greatest opposition.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll be creating a lot more Horowitzes going forward by doing this.
That would be a dream. I would love to see that. I mean,
that's
David Horowitz. We actually hosted him at UCI.
Oh, is he great?
Probably about 8 months or a year ago. Yeah, we had him come in because at UCI they have what's called Apartheid Week. So the Students for Justice in Palestine and the Muslim Student Union, which are, you know, two fairly radical leftist groups on campus, they hold what's called Apartheid Week, where they talk about all the crimes that Israel has supposedly done, and they actually enact what they call an apartheid wall. So in the middle of campus, they write all of Israel's crimes and talk about, you know, how they hate Jews and all that stuff. So we brought in David Horowitz to say, hey, you know, this is BS, essentially. You know, I was part of the left. You know, I'm Jewish. I understand this. And he talked about it in a very poignant way, and I thought it was phenomenal.
Did he, when he was at your campus, did he take questions from those folks?
He did take a few questions. You know, he spoke, just gave a speech for most of the time, and he had another event to go to. But he took one or two questions. There were a few, you know, leftist people in there, you know, liberal people in there, however you want to define it, who did say a few questions. I don't remember exactly what they said, but. You know, he defended them very, very well, and, you know, they just ended up storming out of the building at the end. So I think you could tell kind of who won the argument.
Yeah, I've seen him field questions before, and he's just masterful in the way he basically dissects the topic and leaves them empty-handed. And that's exactly what they end up doing, is calling names and stomping out and shouting and, you know, basically having a little bit of a tantrum. So it's good that you have folks like that come in. Give them a challenge.
But see, what they don't realize, what these professors don't understand, is they're literally grooming potential David Horowitzes in their little safe spaces. Yes, we should all take our vitamins so we live long enough to watch that happen, because it's going to be awesome. I'm excited about it now. I mean, I'd like to get.
I think it's gonna be a great time.
Yeah, I'm pretty. I mean, when Barack Obama came in and all the stuff he was doing, and I remember saying to a large group of people that he's the best thing that's ever happened to conservatives, and people were mad at me. And it was like, no, you don't understand. All the people who are like me, and a lot of other people who were there. There were hundreds of us that came out with the early, you know, in the Tea Party. And well, I just looked around that room, and it's like, have any of you ever done this kind of thing before? No, no one had. So you look, what got us out of our, you know, job and our life, and what made us step up and get involved politically?
He educated a lot of folks.
He has been the father of the conservative movement.
He's the best gun salesman in America, that's for
there,
sure.
And there's that, yeah. He's done a very good job with that, too. It's kind of funny. So I guess I'm hoping going forward maybe we make this really strong turn. Are we ready for, got it up there? I was trying to read Bob's mind while he was typing. I'm obviously not good at that, so I had to wait until he saw me. We need to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with Peter Van Voorhis. We're talking about what's going on at colleges and shutting down debates and that kind of stuff. I hope you'll hang with us. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
the time I've known you, I still don't know what you mean. The weekend at the college didn't turn out like you planned. The things that pass for knowledge I can't understand. Are you reeling in the years? Stowing away the time.
Sometimes the old classics. That was funny back when we were in college. Still funny. Maybe it's just a college thing. So, Peter, what year are you in school, or how long have you been there? And
so, I'm actually a third year in school, but I'm actually graduating this quarter for a variety of reasons. I'm able to get out a little bit early, so I'm actually pretty excited. That means a year and a half less of liberalism I have to hear. So, it's awesome.
That is phenomenal. Yeah, I've got a niece who graduated in three, and a nephew who's graduating in three. So, it's interesting. You know, back when I was in school, it seems like we were all trapped there for like 5 years, 6 years. I don't know. You guys must be. You guys must have a better plan than we did.
They have a better reason to get out early.
We were wandering.
Don't want to be there.
We were having fun. We were wandering around doing whatever, and you guys are like, "How do I make this shorter?" Well, are you going to do more writing? Is that something that's in your? You would have gotten. You would have had excellent grades in my class. I would have said, here, everyone, do this like Peter does.
Well, I certainly appreciate that, Aaron. I plan to keep writing for as long as I feel like I'm still contributing. I really, really enjoy it, but I also feel like it makes an impact. And I'm just incredibly passionate about showing the rest of America and the rest of the world what's actually going on these campuses. And also showing, you know, from the perspective of a conservative millennial, you know, how we view the world and how we think that we can reach out to more people. Because, you know, the Republican Party obviously hasn't done incredibly well with my generation for a variety of reasons. Some are our fault and some are not our fault. And I think, you know, we need a lot of other young people and, frankly, the rest of America to really, really get behind us and say, hey, we got to figure out how to reach out to our young people because we're the next generation of voters. So we got to do that to keep winning.
I think that's a really good point. I bring that up to people quite often because, you know, people are very fond of saying, well, everyone, you know, under the age of whatever, pick a number, is lost. And I have, like, what, 14 nieces and nephews between the ages of, I don't know, 15 and 25, I guess. And they're all really, you know, they're
well-grounded and they understand.
Yeah, they have good values. They, you know, they're smart. And they're all really basically very conservative. I don't know how they vote, but I've got a pretty good idea. And so I know from my own experience that no, all is not lost. And when I read your articles, I thought, you know, you would have done so well in all of the, you know, I always had my students, I was a high school teacher. And so I always had the kids write in a different form. You know, you're a reporter. No personal facts, right? Just the story.
Yeah.
Want you to tell the story, but without you being in it. And that one story about the liberal professor who was just really a sensible man was done in such our professional reporters could really take a lesson.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. I mean, I do opinion as well, so I'm able to get, you know, a little bit of my thoughts out on that. But what I really just try and do is stick to the facts. Just say, hey, this is what it is, and leave it up to, you know, your interpretation how you want to view it. And I think, unfortunately, what's happened, you know, with most people in the media, certainly more on the left than the right, is it's become very, very agenda-driven. I mean, I forget the exact name, but one of the very high-up editors at the New York Times said during, you know, election season before the election was decided that, you know, really reporting in an unbiased manner is no longer what we're going to do because Trump is so bad, Hillary's so good. We just can't let this happen. It's our duty to report in this way. And that's scary when you really think about it. You know, we all knew that, you know, it's been like that for a while, but the fact that now it is.
It's bona fide propaganda now.
Absolutely. And the fact that they're open about it, I mean, that's almost scarier that no one is really reacting that much to it.
Oh, I don't know if I agree with that. I think more and more people are reacting to it, and I truly believe the press has really dug themselves into a hole, and as long as they continue down this road of biased reporting, people are going to start turning their back on mainstream media and look for other sources that will give them the truth.
The bad part is now there are so many sources. I had someone call the office last week and they wanted to know. It was funny. It seemed like such an easy question, but it had no answer. She just wanted to know where she could go to vet things to make sure they were true. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you don't have any idea really how difficult that is.
What do you do, hit 10 of them and take a mean average?
It said, you know, wait until whatever thing you're worked up about has a bill number, and then go to congress.gov, look up the bill, and read the bill for yourself. But, you know, beyond that,
you just about have to.
A lot of it, yeah, you do have to kind of take an average. I was kind of chuckling because one of our guys in the chat room had written in here a quote from David Horowitz: "Inside every progressive is a totalitarian screaming to get out."
That is accurate. What I thought was really funny about the protests at UC Irvine where they walked out of class is one of the students had a sign that said "No to fascism." But what was so ironic about this is these students were not simply saying we don't like Donald Trump. They totally have a right to do that. I don't agree with them necessarily, but I support their right to do that. But what they were actually doing is they were saying, you know, the election is illegitimate. We do not support the peaceful transfer of power. When you really think about it, that's the definition of fascism. They're just a bunch of little fascists. I mean, is Ben Shapiro, you know, someone who I really look up to and respect and actually, you know, write for his website, dailywire.com. You know, he calls these guys special snowflakes, little fascists. That's what they are on the inside.
Yeah, which is really kind of, they don't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know. They've bought in. Like I said, when you live, I think the professor was, Professor Roth was correct. When you live in an echo chamber, you're not hearing things correctly and in the right context. It was interesting. We forgot to log into the chat room while we were talking to you. We were having so much fun. We just kind of forgot to do our jobs here.
Totally.
It's like, oh yeah, the chat room. We better go see what people are asking us to say, right? We had somebody earlier on in the conversation. She said, I guess it could be a man too. Do you guys know as a fact if the verbiage of Trump's executive action on restraining immigration was the same as what Obama used back in 2011? And I've heard that too.
Yeah, I heard that it was
the language was very, very similar.
Yeah, it was the same.
And there also is a Bill Clinton speech, 1995, about closing our borders. I should find that again.
Well, there's an Obama speech where Obama wanted to build a wall.
Right.
It was okay.
But back in 95, Bill Clinton's speech, if Trump was to read that speech, oh my gosh, they'd be all over him. But a Democrat president said that back in 95. So it's really weird. It just, for some reason, it doesn't matter. We're not looking at the idea. We're looking at who said it.
Who said it?
When you talk to people at school, where do they get their, I mean, everybody's different, but what are the predominant, quote, news sources? If you're a college student these days,
you know, I would think a lot of it is Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that. They really just see what their friends share. You know, I think a lot of people in my generation, for one reason or another, don't really tend to read the news. Maybe out of laziness, maybe they don't trust it. I don't know specifically, but I think a lot of people really just listen to their friends. And again, that's just more part of that echo chamber, because if all your friends are just saying the same stuff, you know. Republicans are horrible, Democrats are great, all that stuff. You're just going to take that as fact and believe it. And when I talk to these students and I bring up conservative points of view, you can tell that logically they agree with it, but emotionally they don't necessarily feel it, just because they have been so inundated with it with liberal ideas for years that they almost can't comprehend a viewpoint that's contradictory to their pre-existing worldview.
What's the, if you had to kind of rank the hot button stuff, what's going to get you the most hate, I guess, if you bring it up?
The most hate. I'm going to have to think about that. I can't put things in exact order, but I would say if I were just to discuss a few, I would say it would definitely be criticizing safe spaces. You know, if you were ever to criticize, you know, Black Lives Matter or any, hardcore leftist organization that you disagreed with, not on the basis of race, but just you disagreed with.
Sure, the idea.
Just with the idea of it. Any of that, any gender stuff, certainly if you called someone the wrong pronoun, that's not something you'd want to do. It will probably not be met with the best reaction. And just generally, I think just bringing up a contradictory idea.
It's interesting because it prior to the election, it seemed like all we were hearing about was global warming. And it seems like that's kind of taken a back seat now to the election. Do you find that on campus as well, that global warming is really not a hot topic anymore?
I do, yeah. There's certainly a contingency of, you know, people who still are talking about those environmental issues. A lot of times you'll have, you know, a big protest against whatever. And there's always, you know, there's some of the environmentalists, some of the social justice warriors, all of those different people in there. But I think what's happened is they've found a better opportunity to protest, because I think, you know, people were kind of tired of hearing the whole global warming thing, you know,
right.
Kind of got old, and now they have fresh stuff to protest.
Sure.
Trump and Republicans and pretty much anything we come up with.
Yeah.
Pretty much. If we look down through our archives, pretty much all that.
So what you're saying is you're driving the conversation now.
That's correct. When you think about it,
we
absolutely are. That's quite the position of power.
No kidding.
As we make ourselves new little David Horowitzes.
Yeah.
Awesome is that. I'm so excited about that.
Yeah.
Got to get that guy on. I want to talk about all this with him. We'd have to take one more quick break before the top of the hour. Our guest is Peter Van Voorhis. He is a student at UC Irvine. He is a conservative millennial. I guess the category of people that everyone thinks don't exist, but they do, thanks to Peter. We'll be right back. You can find all our information at wethepeopleradio.us.
Snowflake dressed in a snow white gown. Tap, tap, tapping at your window pane to tell you she's in town. Here comes Susie Snowflake, soon you will hear her say, come out everyone and play with me, I haven't long to stay. If you want
in her special safe space.
That song is incredible. We should play that at every single protest for the special snowflake.
Oh my God. Oh, Peter, we'll have to, Bob will have to send you his little playlist for today. I asked him,
That's
I go,
awesome.
Do we have any snowflake songs? He goes, oh yes, they're coming.
That's incredible.
That's what happens.
That was Rosemary Clooney, by the way.
That's what happens when you hang out with old people. Okay, so when was that? That was before my time.
Oh, before my time.
Before all of our time.
Definitely before my time.
We reach back into the archives and, hilarious. So, I wonder how, so if you, I know you probably can't do this, there's probably some sort of a net that drops out of the sky and you wind up incarcerated, but if you were to say, you know, if you were to tell someone, you know, don't be such a snowflake, or made a comment, something that included that, does just all hell break loose?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you would get screamed at. They would try and, you know, shout at you, talk over you. They wouldn't want to hear what you had to say, certainly not. So, yeah, it would not go over very well. I don't know if you'd land in jail, but I certainly think they would probably like to see you in jail.
I mean, safe space jail.
I thought about that.
Yeah, safe space jail, special college jail.
Another thing I noticed, and it's really kind of sad, is they're very boisterous and very outspoken when they're in a large group, but if it's one-on-one, they completely crumble in just minutes.
Like snowflakes, they melt.
Yeah, they do. They do, because they don't have the team support that's required to be a true, you know, successful snowflake.
Okay.
The, That's correct, because I think when you're in a giant crowd of people and you're just there shouting and the entire purpose is just to make a bunch of noise and try and get your opinion out there, I guess that's what they're trying to do. You know, you're not going to sit there and try and have a long debate with people. So there's kind of power in numbers in that sense. But the second, you know, you get pulled off the side and someone's talking to you about it, you quickly realize their arguments don't have a ton of rational basis.
No.
Well, okay, so I'll be the staff misogynist here, and we're volunteers, so we're not really on the staff, but, you know.
Yeah.
Just in case the station starts getting a lot of hate, you know, from those people on Sunday.
Of course.
who's worse, women or men?
As far as protesters go?
Yeah, just, you know, who's more irrational in your travels through Snowflake Town? Who's more irrational, the girls or the boys?
Snowflake Town. I would say they're pretty much the same. I mean,
it's the girls. Just say it. It's always the girls.
I don't think so, actually.
Really?
I really don't think so. If I had to say it, I would all... No, really, really, they're actually about the same. If I really, really were to think about it, I mean, maybe some are worse on a few issues, some are worse on others, but I would say at the core, they're pretty united in their worldview. I mean, they all... You know, they're all feminists, obviously. They're all love the environment. They're all social justice warriors. And I think the reason is because there's not tons of room for dissent.
You know, you either totally
accept the liberal playbook.
That and the guys have had all the testosterone beaten out of them.
That's true. They're all metro now.
That's correct. They are definitely a little bit metro.
They're wearing chick pants, as a friend of ours used to point out. That part's kind of scary, too. We've blended everybody. What are these people going to be when they grow up? Is there any, I guess, trend there so we can stay away from that industry?
Maybe Soros-funded professional protesters. I would guess that. I mean, they're pretty good at it, actually. They get a fair amount of attention. But no, I don't know what they'll do. I'm sure there are some who maybe will go out into the real world, realize it's crazy, maybe become little David Horowitzes and get over it. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who really, they're just kind of going to be bitter for their whole lives. I think at the core, these leftists kind of know that their worldview doesn't make sense, but they don't really know how to kind of escape it. They've been in the bubble for so long, and that's all that they know. So I think you'll just have a lot of unsatisfied people that think America's a horrible place, and you know, life sucks, and if you're not, you know, born a multimillionaire, rich, white, heterosexual male, that you can't progress in society. I think you're just gonna have a lot of really dissatisfied people.
Ooh, that's not awesome. Yeah, I was looking
that's
at your.
That's not awesome.
No, that is way less than
neither
awesome.
Is liberalism.
No, it's not awesome either. And so, in your campus reform article, I'm sure you have many, but in this one that we've linked, I really love the first picture that I can't even say online, but it uses the F word. So it's like the F word, America, AmerikKKKA.
Correct.
Like, what is up with that?
Hmm. Well, the sad part is, you know, all Trump really has to offer them is a job, and that is so wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, a job?
That's when you better make sure you can spell the F word correctly.
Yeah,
huh?
That's right.
You're not going to be a protester very long.
That's correct. I mean, you better make sure. They spelled the F word right there.
Yeah, they got that right.
That was not too hard, but America with three Ks, I mean, I think, you know... I get the point. Maybe, you know, they feel like Trump doesn't totally go with their racial views and whatever way that is. I don't necessarily agree or disagree. That's just how they feel about it. But for them to say, F this country, I mean,
yeah.
The only reason why you're allowed to protest is saying F this country, or the only reason, sorry, I should say, the only reason you're allowed to protest is because of the First Amendment and the freedoms that this country offers. Go try doing that in some dictatorship or some, you know, go try doing that in Venezuela and saying, F Hugo Chavez. Or,
yeah, you
know,
will be disappeared.
And that was provided to them by our men and women in uniform. And thanks to them,
correct.
By the way, we're not going to be, we're going to be unburning a bunch of flags today. That's what we're doing with Peter. We're going to come back and discuss more on this topic with our friend Peter Van Voris, who's down there in Irvine. Thanks, Peter. We'll be right back. This is We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon. You are joining the second hour of We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And when one of us is missing, everything is kooky. So we're all here today. It's awesome. We have our guest with us, Peter Van Voris, who is a third-year student and graduating soon at
also,
UC Irvine.
Yeah. Also, we want to thank sponsor for at the top of the hour, Powerhouse Solar. And my mic sounds like I'm in a can. What's going on with that?
We did.
Oh, I just lost my mic. Oh, there, I'm back. Okay, I won't complain.
I hope you're happy. We just disconnected you.
I'm not complaining anymore. If the can's all I get, that's cool.
Get over it.
Powerhouse Solar, Bruce and Sue Blake, top-of-the-line solar in Reading. Give them a call, 530-275-5600.
And they do a great job, and they'll help you figure out if it's a good thing for you or if you can... You know, how you can do it, and the follow-up is always there.
Absolutely.
Unlike a lot of the fly-by-nighters. So, that being said, back to campus. When you first went to school, Peter, like what kind of, you know, without getting all, you know, into your business, what goes on in your family? Is everybody pretty straight arrow?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's pretty conservative. I was very much blessed to live or grow up, I should say, in a family that, you know, valued, you know, traditional American values and, you know, hard work and, you know, all of the things that I think make conservatism and the Republican Party so great.
And so you went to college, and did you know that it was going to be crazy town when you got there, or was that like, what happened? Because I was super surprised.
I didn't actually. You know, if I had chosen to go to, you know, UC Berkeley or Humboldt State or one of those very, very radical colleges, I would have known I was getting into that. But, I mean, you have to remember, I live in Orange County, which is, it's Reagan country. You know, I mean, we're like one of the most Republican areas, at least along the coast specifically.
I think you're the only
California.
One.
Yeah, in California. And I live in Newport Beach, which is the most Republican city in California by far. So, I mean, this is Republican Central. So I was thinking, you know, there might be a few lefties, but it's not going to be too bad. But I was sorely, sorely mistaken.
Yeah, what an eye-opener.
Surprise! Yeah, I had my first roommate was, she wanted to, like, grow up and be a sex therapist. It was like, what?
Sounds like Humboldt.
Well, we just moved here from Connecticut, so what did I know about Humboldt? I just knew that the kids in the Bay Area weren't going there, so I thought, oh, that'll be a good school. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was pretty, and and then, you know, of course, you always meet people that, you know, you get along with, but yeah, anyway, that was shocking. I just wondered if you had that cultural thing as well.
I was a little bit shocked, but luckily, I mean, I've considered myself to be conservative since I was probably like 4 or 5. Like seriously, I've always embodied this belief system. So to me, you know, I was surprised, but I wasn't necessarily afraid of it because I felt very, you know, able to defend my point of view, which I've definitely been able to, certainly through a variety of means. So it hasn't been challenging in that sense because it's not really that difficult to kind of refute their statements, but it can get a little bit tiring at times.
It always helps when you're well-spoken. I found that an abundance of words always comes in handy. Are you finding that there are kids hiding in the weeds pretending to be on their team just so they don't have to defend themselves? How many pretenders do you have down there?
You know, I don't have an exact figure on that.
I know.
There are definitely some of them. And I mean, I got to say, on a few occasions, just for the sake of my GPA, I've pretended to be a liberal. Not ashamed of it, because at the end of the day, you know, I need to make sure that I don't fail my classes.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, sometimes you don't necessarily want to speak out in class because, I mean, these professors are intimidating. You know, I'm not sure how many of your listeners have heard this, but I'm sure you guys have heard this. At UC Irvine, a little less than two years ago, the student council, it's called ASUCI, it's basically the student council, they voted to ban the American flag in their office because it offended some students. Yes, actually ban the American flag. And I took a general ed course, and the professor, the very first day of class, brought one of the girls who voted to ban the American flag. The professor brought her to the front of the class, gave her a hug, and said in front of everyone, "Thank you for standing up to, you know, American nationalism and American imperialism." And that was quite an interesting 10 weeks.
Holy cow.
Welcome to college, huh?
Welcome to college, baby. So it was that was quite a shock. That was probably the worst class, and I have plenty of fun stories from that if you guys would like to hear it.
And what class was that?
That was actually African American Studies.
Hmm.
Wow. Okay, yeah, so regale us with stories. Let's go campfire.
Sure. I've really tried to block these out of my memory. It was quite an interesting 10
we'll get you back into therapy when you're done.
Totally. I need a safe space, actually. I didn't get a safe space in that class.
No puppy?
No puppies, unfortunately. That would have been excellent, actually. I probably would have put up with it for that. But specifically just thinking back, you know, saying, you know, all white people are racist, saying that, you know, all white people own slaves, even though, you know, my recent ancestors were immigrants to America, you know, from Europe, saying just, you know, she said specifically anyone who likes Ron Paul has, quote, a life problem.
Wow.
A life problem if you vote Republican. I mean, this professor was crazy. I mean, she was just off the rocker, just nuts. So, like, literally a Marxist. So it was quite interesting. And frankly, I'm glad that I took the class, just because I think it showed me really, really how radical that element is. But I mean, I can't imagine these students who, you know, they come into college and let's say they're, you know, an English major, a history major, or, you know, something that's not, you know, finance like I'm doing. You know, someone goes in and takes these kind of humanities courses and they're not very strong in their political beliefs. They don't really know, you know, what to believe. If you just hear 4 years of the same thing, if you were in classes like that for 4 years, of course you're going to come out like a liberal. Why wouldn't you? I mean, of course you wouldn't. The only reason why I'm not is because, you know, I chose a major that obviously is not very liberal. It's not necessarily conservative, but it's not liberal.
Well, it's not loaded with opinion.
Fairly strong in my belief.
Yeah, you're not in an opinion field.
That's correct.
Good thing.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm very thankful for that. It's made my time here definitely a little bit easier.
Well, my Republican nephew, who is just hilarious, he's really, really smart, and he's just funny, is down at San Diego State. And so he's one of the RAs of their, you know, dorm or whatever. He's been doing that for, I don't know, a couple of years, I guess. And he just is, I think he's going to go into psychology. He's been having so much fun down there with all that. It's like, you know, I guess I want to dig in a little farther. You know, what's making the clockwork go?
Oh, you want
we'll
to
see how that turns out.
On what makes the field so liberal?
Sure.
Yeah, and you know what do you think the deal is? No accountability is my first thought, but
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, academia just as the military or in I'm taking this idea from Jonathan Roth, that liberal professor we talked about specifically before that, but where he talks about specifically the point of view where, you know, academia has always been somewhat liberal and the military has always been, you know, somewhat conservative. That's just inherently that's what it is. But I think in the past, you know, couple decades with identity politics and a lot of those other kind of more hyper-liberal viewpoints, academia has really, really taken a hold of that. And just as there's a small contingency of students who very much, you know, controls the narrative as far as protesting goes, there's a small contingency of professors in each of these little departments that, you know, whether it's history or whatever, you know, department we're discussing, there's a small contingency of professors who tend to really control the narrative and really say, you know, this is what we're going to talk about in these classes. This is, you know, the viewpoint we're going to have. A lot of times it's the chair of that department, so they can control, you know, where funding goes. So they have a lot of that institutional power, and unfortunately they've just really, really run wild with it, really gone very, very leftward.
Yeah, and that's just a tough deal all the way around because it doesn't – it's interesting because what is he? He's a guy that I work with up in Siskiyou County. His son is a teacher at I think it's junior college. I don't know. Maybe he's a professor, but up in Washington State. And they told them that they had to call everyone Z or Q. It's a letter, right? Isn't that the gender?
Z or Zer, one of those. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has like an X in it. Yeah.
The gender now is a Z kind of thing. And he's like, yeah, no. So he calls all of his students, hey, you.
Hey you. That's awesome. Hey you. Or just dude or something.
No, he's hey you. You know, just sick
hey
of
you.
It.
I love it. I think what also happened, you know, above and beyond just the liberal or the very leftist people controlling each of the departments is that conservative professors, especially if they're not tenured, are afraid to speak out. Because when you have, you know, 80 or 90% or whatever it is of people in a department who have that same point of view or at least support the more radical leftist point of view, if you want to get funding for your research, if you want to get promoted, if you want to, you know, teach more classes, if you want to do anything, you know, and you're out there saying, no, I'm a conservative through and through, that's not going to happen. When all the people who are in control through administrators and through professors and all that stuff, when all of them are pretty much about leftists, you have no choice. You can either support them or stay silent. But if you want to be conservative, you're not going very far in academia.
See, and that's just brutal.
Yeah,
that is
hard.
Brutal. Just shutting down a whole side of the discussion. No wonder these guys want to stay there forever. You know, some of these kids, they don't. Are you finding that more people are doing like you have done, get out in 3 years, or are they staying longer?
I would say actually more people are staying longer.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
I'm just trying to graduate early, just because I can, and because you know I don't really like dealing with all this liberal stuff for so long. I prefer to be out in the real world. But I think a lot of people, you know, they do want to stay long because they really do enjoy that college bubble. And they really think that it is a, you know, they like their safe space. They like to just be said, everything that you believe is totally correct. They're all racist. We have the moral high ground. You're perfect. You're a special snowflake. And that's comforting to a lot of people, fortunately or unfortunately. So, they definitely want to stay longer.
Hmm. And it's, you know, it's so damaging. At some point, they're going to have to get out in the real world and, you know, take their shots, and it's going to be brutal for them. It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the truest statement I think I've heard all day. That's absolutely correct.
Man.
Yeah, the shock will be amazing. I hope they never move to Northern California. That'll be stunning for them.
Oh, they will be in
therapy. Oh, yeah.
Surprise!
They can move to the Bay Area. They'll find plenty of friends there. Trust me.
That's true because they're living in a total bubble there. At that.
Oh yeah.
It's kind of harsh. Yeah, my brothers both fled to Texas. They lived in the Bay Area for a number of years and ran away.
they're smart.
Yeah, they had to run away.
I live in the Bay Area. I moved to Orange County. It's just I had to be around some Republicans just to balance it out.
Yeah, it just gets old after a while. You really can't have a discussion. It. Without being called a name, which is difficult. I have a hard time with that. That's one of my challenges. Anyway, we need to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back. And when we do, how about this? We'll come back in with the State of the Union, not the whole thing, but a clip out of the State of the Union with Bill Clinton on immigration and Peter's take on what would happen if we did that now. That ought to be interesting. You can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
And we can take you back now to 1995.
Americans. Not only in the states most heavily affected, but in every place in this country are rightly disturbed by the large numbers of illegal aliens entering our country. The jobs they hold might otherwise be held by citizens or legal immigrants. The public service they use impose burdens on our taxpayers. That's why our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more by hiring a record number of new border guards, by deporting twice as many criminal aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens. In the budget I will present to you, we will try to do more to speed the deportation of illegal aliens who are arrested for crimes, to better identify illegal aliens in the workplace, as recommended by the commission headed by former Congresswoman Barbara Jordan. We are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws. It is wrong and ultimately self-defeating for a nation of immigrants to permit the kind of abuse of our immigration laws we have seen in recent years, and we must do more to stop it.
What the heck was that? Was that Donald Trump? Oh,
and by the way, if you look at the chamber, both sides of the aisle are all standing.
Yeah. Bill Clinton.
It was not Trump doing a Bill Clinton impersonation.
No, that was the State of the Union in 1995. Yeah. So,
well, that was okay. I mean, back then that was okay. Now it's that's hate speech.
So back in the time capsule in 2017, how do you think that would play out, Peter?
I don't think that would play out well. I mean, what's funny is, you know, Chuck Schumer was obviously a member of the House of Representatives back then. He's obviously Senate Majority Leader right now, and he is just railing on Trump's immigration plan, which I would say is somewhat similar to this. Granted, you know, that deals specifically with Syrian refugees and, you know, barring people from certain, countries in the Middle East from coming. But that would not go over well. And I would venture to say that's probably the last time we'll ever hear a Democrat say something like that, at least for a good while.
But isn't that interesting how far, how far it's gone, how radical the change has been? That used to be considered normal. You know, that made sense, actually, that we were going to protect our borders and take care of our own citizens. And now it's like, oh, my gosh, what did they say about that? Like when Trump said, you know, we're going to put America first, that's huge hate speech, right?
That's total hate speech. And, you know, I think certainly there is some of contingency of maybe a few people on the right who are doing it for somewhat, you know, racist reasons. They don't like some people from other countries. But at the same time, there's people on the left who are, you know, just as racist in that sense against, you know, various other groups of people. And at the end of the day, we as a country do not have to let in other people from other countries. You know, just as Syria can say, hey, we don't want Americans to come in, not that they have, but I'm saying they have the right to say that. We have the same right to say, hey, we can restrict immigration from certain countries. We're, you know, a nation of borders, a nation of laws. And, whether or not the policy is effective, we still have a right to do that. And to say that it's somehow racially motivated, I think that's very incorrect. And I think you're really twisting the argument. I think, you know, what President Trump is saying is that, hey, you know, for one reason or another, a very, very small percentage of the people who come from here, do not like America. And I think most of the people are probably just normal, fine people who are just looking for a better life. But, you know, unfortunately, when there are a few people in there, it's not a risk we can take. And at the same time, the idea that, you know, by bringing in all these people from other countries, we could somehow solve the humanitarian crisis over there is just absolutely incorrect, you know. If we bring in, on an extreme level, you know, millions and millions of people, you still have tens of millions and hundreds of millions of other people over there suffering. And, we're going to have to improve the situation over there. We can't just bring people in and say, that's going to solve it, because it's not. And we're lying to ourselves, and we're ultimately, you know, making that country worse off.
I think that 95 speech with Bill Clinton really kind of emphasizes how crazy the Democrats have become in 2017 when they take those same ideas that they applauded, you know, 12 years ago, and now they call them hate speech and crazy ideas, and it's, how can you swing that radically?
Follow your own laws. That's when following the laws of your own country is a crazy idea.
Is a crazy idea. I mean, if you could just memorize that part of the Bill Clinton speech and then ask people, you know, recite it to somebody and say, who do you think said that on a college campus? They would probably say Hitler. You know, I mean,
do you think they would?
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly agree with that. I actually I was filming a video. I haven't released it yet because we're still filming some of it. But I went around and I took the 1920 German National Socialist Party platform, aka the Nazi Party platform, you know, written and supported obviously by Adolf Hitler. And I changed all the quotes from Hitler to Bernie Sanders, and I put a Bernie Sanders logo at the top. And I went around and asked people. I said, "Hey, do you support these ideas?" And it just talked, it was nothing really radical. It just talked about socialism and, you know, how we need to support the family and the military. And it said, you know, how the redistribution of wealth and the nationalization of businesses, and something that it was straight out of a Bernie Sanders platform. And all these people said, "Oh, this is awesome. I love this." And when I said, "You know what you actually just signed there? You actually just signed a Nazi Party petition." They were shocked. And, we got screamed at a few times. It really shows that their ideas are, you know, they think they're so pure, but the actual implementation of them, you know, I'm not saying that Bernie Sanders would become a Nazi. I don't think he would do that. But it shows that when you give government that much control, stuff like that can happen. You know, it sounds great in theory, but in reality, socialism is a disaster.
Well, the other thing that it really proves is that they think all these things are new. That's the truly crazy part. They think these are all new ideas that have never been tried, and if we just did them, it would be, you know,
magical. Yeah, and I think a lot of that stems from the fact that they don't teach history, and what history they do teach, they are rewriting it, and they're not showing young people what happens.
Yeah, how much of the history that you're getting in school, since you're, you know, the most, you know, the closest to high school and college.
Yeah.
What kind of history do you think you've gotten, since I'm sure you've read beyond what they made you read? You think is it altered as much as we think?
I actually haven't taken any history classes in college, just because I tested out of them just from high school. But in high school, I didn't feel like the material was – I felt like it was fairly impartial. You know, if I took a look at it again, I'm sure I could find different things where they kind of, you know, jabbed America here, jabbed America there. But generally, I think it was pretty fairly good. But, you know, in the past couple of years, as far as what I know, the College Board, which is people who put on, you know, advanced placement courses and the SAT, they actually changed some of the curriculum around in advanced placement U.S. history to be more of what they reflected is more of kind of a revisionist liberal view of America, talking about very much saying that, you know, the founders were all racist slave owners and they were bad people and all that stuff. And what the problem with that is that was somewhat true. A lot of the founding fathers were slave owners because people, you know, did that at the time. That it was horrible. It's not correct, but it's a factual thing. But unfortunately, what we're doing is we're taking, you know, today's moral standards and then we're applying them back then. You know, they say that, you know, America was such a terrible country because we had slavery. That was horrible. That should not have happened. That's horrific. And if I could change it, if I could go back and change it, I totally would. I think, you know, anyone alive today would. But what they fail to recognize is America was the first country that said, wait, this is wrong. We can't do this. There's no way that this is, you know, biblical to be doing this. We're the country that basically started to stop it. You know, a thing that a practice that was around for thousands and thousands of years, we're the ones that say, hey, this is wrong. And, you know, unfortunately, they're overlooking that giant detail because they're judging the past through the lens of the present, which I think is not a very good way to view history. It's not an academic way to view history, at the least.
Right. It should be looked at within the context of what was happening at that time and not... I guess the other thing is, too, they always want to take bad things from the past and put them on people of the present, you know?
That's absolutely correct. I mean, specifically my professor, you know, who said, you know, all white people were slave owners or whatever back in the day. That's not correct, actually. I mean, the vast majority of people were not. It was mainly the elite planters. So just to make such an audacious claim, and even if that claim were true, to then say, therefore, because you're descended from them, that's your fault, it's not. That's wrong. That's unethical to say that. And, I mean, especially in a classroom, especially in a taxpayer-funded classroom, to say that and get away with it, That's ridiculous. That's wrong.
Yeah. What about the whole tax thing? Talk to me about Obamacare too. What's happening with them with that? Do they have any? Oh, we're supposed to take a break. Sorry, I was all excited. I was going to talk about something else. When we come back, maybe because I know you did this one article. Millennials should celebrate Trump's executive order on Obamacare. Let's not gloss that over. When we come back, give us your thoughts. We're here with Peter Van Voorhis. He's a student down there at UC Irvine. And you can find all of his contact information and the articles that we're referencing at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. Get that to Ray's son so he can use it for class.
Yeah.
Because if you don't want to call him Z, you can call him Hey You and harken back to the Pink Floyd song.
Help him carry the
stone. Of the same name.
There's going to be a lot of stones to carry when they get out of school. They're going to need some help.
We used to get to say a lot of really weird stuff in songs in the 70s.
Yeah. I think they were all time travelers.
They were too.
They were writing it for us.
They knew it was going to be comedy of the future. Ugh, bizarre. So, back to our guest. So what about the executive order? What are you finding with kids now in their concept of the Affordable Care Act that turned out to not be affordable?
You know, I think most people my age don't realize that the Affordable Care Act is an absolute disaster because, you know, I think a lot of people, they just take it as fact. It's an affordable, they call it, oh, the Affordable Care Act. Well, of course it's going to be affordable. It reminds me of a Jimmy Kimmel skit I saw, you know, a couple weeks ago where they went out on the street and said, you know, do you support the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare? And some people were like, oh, you know, I can support the Affordable Care Act. I like affordability, but Obamacare, no, that sucks. They don't even realize what it is. I would highly encourage everyone listening now to go watch that. You could probably just type in, you know, Jimmy Kimmel, Obamacare, Affordable Care Act. It should come up. But
I will be linking that to the page.
You should. It was hilarious.
Is it true that, I mean, you watched, I watched one of those same videos, I forget what program it was on, but they were asking college students who heads of state were, who's the president, vice president, who's the speaker, who's, you know, and then they would actually give a name and ask if they knew who they were. Do you find that college students today are kind of out of touch with government? I mean, They all talk a great line, but do they know who our government heads are?
No, I mean they have no idea. I'm sure everyone knows who the president is generally, but I would say the majority probably wouldn't even know who the vice president was. And if you started to get into anything like, you know, who's Senate Majority Leader, who's the Speaker of the House, they would have no idea. I mean, I remember a video I watched, gosh, a couple months ago, where they were asking, you know, how many states are there, and people didn't even know that.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, I saw that.
No, I'm not joking.
Yeah, the one I watched, they asked who fought in the Civil War. They didn't know. I mean, that's,
exactly.
Gosh, that's
Britain?
Just...
I don't know. That's what they said, probably.
Yeah, they did. Some of them did. Well, some of them said Germany. Yeah.
Well, let's go back to the lady who called our Auburn office to let us know that, this was right after the election, that President Trump, or a president-elect at that time, Trump, was just like the Nazis when they built the wall in the 1930s to keep the Jews out. And that moment of silence is just because everyone's head just exploded. I mean, it's like...
Wait a minute.
What?
The wall? The Berlin, Wall?
Did they,
yeah.
Did they build the Berlin Wall was in 1961 anyways. I don't...
And it was built by communists, and if they built the wall
built
to keep the... And if it was built to keep the Jews out, how did they all die? I mean, just the only thing she got right was that Trump won the election. That was...
It is sad.
I don't even know what to really say to that. That I'm not even going to comment. You know,
we didn't comment either.
Why give time to stupidity? It doesn't make any sense.
No, my coworker said thank you for your call. And just didn't even bother to go down the road. But
yeah.
I've had a lot of people phoning who are angry that they're talking about repealing the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, whatever you want to call it. And when when you ask them, they're not on it. They don't have. That's not their insurance, so they really have no idea. They're calling based on talking points that they're getting from wherever.
Of course. They're not independently thinking about it. And before we go into kind of a discussion on why the Affordable Care Act is so bad, let's just forget the fact for a second that it's a total disaster, which it is. Just at a minimum, the idea that the government can force you to buy health care when you don't want it, the idea that they can coerce you to do that, if you don't do that, fine you, and at the same time, while doing so, causing premiums to go up, that at a minimum is just, that's horrific. The government has no right to do that. As I say in my my opinion piece for Red Alert that I wrote a few days ago, we should be appalled, obviously, that it's becoming more expensive for millennials to get health care. It's becoming harder to find jobs because of Obamacare's burdens. But, we're a generation that values our own individual freedom, and or at least supposedly says that we do. Maybe we don't vote that way, but we say that we value our individual freedom. And the idea that we would support a policy, even if it were a good policy, that forces everyone in America to do something, or go to jail for not paying it, or get fined for not paying it, that's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. And a lot of your fellow students, I know in the UC system, we were getting a lot of calls from parents who were freaking out when the Affordable Care Act thing hit because the colleges were adding health care premiums to the tuition because they felt that the insurance, they decided that if the parents' insurance didn't have an 80-20, cost share, this one lady called, she was insured through her company, and it was 70-30. That's what she had picked. And that's what the company provided. Because it was 70-30, she had to have 80-20, which was not up to her. And the college was then adding health care to the tuition bill for the... And I got more than one call about that. So here, their kid couldn't go to school. It wasn't optional. They had to have the insurance, but they couldn't drop them from their own plan because they were only insured on campus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... at UCI, I think... I've been lucky enough to where, my insurance plan allows me to opt out of it, but if I wasn't able to, if I didn't have, a very good health care plan, I would have to pay an extra $466 a quarter, which is, $1,500 a year. So
wow.
If you're in college for 4 years, granted most people take five, but let's just say you're in college for 4 years, you have to pay an extra $6,000. And on top of that, if you're someone who, has to take out student loans, that's going to be double or triple that over time by the time you're paying that off. So, just the idea that they're going to force people to buy it. I mean, especially, I think it's good to have health care. I have health care. I'm glad I have health care. But, most young people don't really need it because we're generally pretty healthy. And the idea that you would put these students further in debt just because you say you must have health care even if you don't want it, that's not acceptable.
And it's funny because...
That's just wrong.
Well, yeah, you talk to older people and they get all mad. I guess I bring this stuff up and they get all mad about it. Because, of course, they just don't know any better. Bottom line is we as society are going to decide for those young people. I hated being called young people. Do you hate being called young people?
I don't mind. I think it's kind of flattering. I hope I get called a young person for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, don't get used to it.
I just get called snarky, so I don't know. I don't know.
Me too.
But snarky is good. It's funny to me, though. Well, they have to buy it, because if they don't, then the whole thing will fall apart. And it's like, oh, okay, so we're going to enslave them to pay for the other people's insurance. I mean, what the heck is that?
No.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's all Obamacare is. I mean, it's kind of like a giant Ponzi scheme when you really think about it. I mean, the reason why premiums are going up so much is, well, of course, it's designed by the government, so,
it's bound to happen.
More expensive and inefficient because it's, you know, centrally planned, and that doesn't work, as history has shown us time and time again, and as it's shown us in this case. But the idea was originally, hey, you're going to get a bunch of young people to sign up for this because we're going to force you to sign up for it, and then because you're still paying a lot for it, but you don't really need that much health care, you're then going to be able to subsidize all the older people who need a lot more health care.
God, that's brilliant.
And then if you can't afford it, we'll subsidize you with the tax money that isn't being paid because you can't get a job because, I mean, it starts to...
And then they're claiming that Obamacare is so good because they're like, oh, but you can get subsidies if you can't afford it. Well, that's true, but, I mean, that doesn't really make any sense. I mean, if you just look at it from a broader perspective as part of the federal budget, I mean, maybe Obamacare is kind of balanced in the sense that, you know, there are people that are subsidized, but, I mean, it's like taking from your left hand, it's like your right hand stealing from your left hand.
Yeah.
You know, however you do the accounting, it doesn't, it's still a drain on the tax system, and we can't really afford that now. Or $20 trillion in debt. That's the last thing we want to do, is spend more money on stuff we don't need to spend money on.
You finance major, you.
I know. What'd you expect?
I bet that's kind of alarming, actually, since you are dealing. Do you guys ever talk about, you know, the actual economics of finance, or do you just talk about the real kind, like how to run a company and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, we talk more about corporate finance and investments and all of that. I think if, you know, you were in an economics course, they might do it. But again, that's going to be all theoretical.
Sure.
It's not necessarily going to be exactly accurate as to how, you know, the real world works.
Well, what's the basic feeling of capitalism? I mean, are they still, you know, preaching that capitalism is bad?
Not in finance.
Yeah, I mean, in my classes, they seem to like it for some reason or another. You can probably guess why, but your comment brings me back to a study that I read a few months ago saying where 51% of millennials, I think just they define that as people under 30, said that socialism was superior to capitalism. 51%.
No.
51%. So, you know, I don't know necessarily what it is at UCI, but I would say it's fairly similar to that. And I think, you know, unfortunately, they just have never heard anything else. And socialism, I mean, if you just read it on paper, it sounds great. Hey, everyone's equal. If you can't, you know, afford, if you're poor, you know, we'll subsidize you. It all sounds great, but it doesn't work. I mean, we see Venezuela. We see even various countries in Europe. You know, socialism just doesn't work. You know, Bernie Sanders always loved to bring up Sweden, but what he failed to recognize is that Sweden, in the 1900s, or the early 1900s, up until about 1970, their economy was booming because they had embraced, they'd finally gone from an agrarian culture to embracing capitalism. And then in the 1970s, they had these socialist reforms and their economy went into the toilet. And only in the past, you know, 10, 20 years have they really begun, they're still somewhat of a democratic socialist or a socialist economy, but they've actually started to embrace more capitalist reforms, and what a surprise, their economy is going again. And, you know, he likes to leave out those little details.
Yeah, well, didn't he also embrace Venezuela?
I'm sure 3 years ago he said that Venezuela is what we're shooting for in the United States. I'm sure he still thinks that it's great, of course.
Yeah, emphasize the shooting, because I think that's what they're doing now.
That's crazy. We need to take one more quick break before the top of the hour, and we'll come back with our guest, Peter Van Voorhis. He's a student at UC Irvine, a smart student at UC Irvine. Very fun to hear someone in your slot in life, you know, speak these kinds of ideas. It's very relaxing. And someone on the chat room gave us a lovely quote from General Mattis. He has a bear rug in his house. It's not dead. It's just afraid to move.
Mad dog. I love it.
We'll be back.
Turn on the tube. Well, I see a whole lot of people crying. Don't blame me. They point the crooked little fingers. Everybody else spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. college at the junior college where we majored in beer and girls. It was all real funny till we ran out of money and they threw us out into the world. Yeah, the kids that thought they'd run this town ain't running much of anything. Just loving and laughing and busting our asses, and we call it all living the dream. These are my people. This is where I come from.
We're giving there you go, Peter. There's your theme song.
Love it.
That is a good one, though. I just think that, you know, Every time somebody tells me, oh, all the youth is just shot. They've all gone to public school. They're all idiots. We're doomed, you know. And then, well, like I said, I know a dozen of them. And so you know they're not doomed. I just think it's important for people to hear from college students like you so that they know they're
yeah, there's hope at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, no matter what kind of weird Kool-Aid, you know, not everybody's drinking it, and some people are immune. So we hope you have a lot of kids and, you know, kind of outpopulate them, actually.
Absolutely. We could definitely do that. Yeah, you know, I really agree with you. I think if you go into it with the mentality and say, hey, all hope is lost, then, yeah, all hope is lost. But I think if you look at it and say, hey, you know, this generation is more liberal than many past generations, certainly than my parents' generation, than my grandparents' generation, and certainly pretty much all of them before that. But at the end of the day, I think that if we take the time to get the message out and really not just tell people, you know, my age, why conservatism is good, but show them and say, hey, this is why it benefits you. This is why it benefits everyone. I think people begin to really be receptive to that. And at the same time, you know, I read an article a few weeks ago that says the generation after mine, I forget what it's called, Generation Z or something like that, but basically the post-9/11 babies, they're supposed to be one of the most conservative generations in many, many lifetimes, you know, because they grew up during the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. They went through, you know, the Great Recession, and they're just really beginning to embody conservative values. So, hey, even if my generation is somewhat liberal, you have a generation much bigger than mine coming up right at, you know, in the next couple of years. They'll start voting, and those people are certainly going to help our cause at the ballot box. So all hope is not lost. There's a lot of hope at the end of the tunnel, and we're just going to keep fighting until it happens.
I think that's awesome. And you know, it might have made, like, would you have been politically active had all this, it's hard to say what life is like outside your actual circumstance, but were you inclined to be political, or was it circumstances that sort of pushed you that way?
I think it was both. I was definitely inclined to be political. I've always been someone that's been fairly political my whole life. I've always been very into American history and American government and politics. You know, I was big into the Second Amendment in high school, still am. But I think specifically why I focused my politics or my political leaning so much on these campus issues is because I recognize that someone's got to put it out there. Someone's got to say, hey, this is what's going on. This is why you should be paying attention. And this is why, frankly, it's wrong. So that's why I do what I do, and I love doing what I do.
Do you see any kind of a shift one way or the other from the time you first went into college to now?
A shift in the political leanings on campus,
yes,
or a shift,
yes,
in the public's reaction to it?
No, on campus.
Yeah, I would say they've gotten more left. I think the left has become more brazen than ever. In their, you know, they're definitely protesting more than ever. They seem to be more extreme in their views than ever, and there's definitely quite the polarization going between the average college students, you know, worldview and the average American's worldview.
So,
and I think at the same time, you know, there's definitely been a shift in public perception. I think because, you know, sites that are like Campus Reform and the College Fix, you know, those stories end up getting picked up by, you know, Fox News all the time, by, you know, New York Times, various other sites. The American public's really beginning to learn what's going on. You know, doing radio interviews like we're doing now, you know, people are beginning to realize how crazy campus issues are, and the campus protesters are,
right,
and the campus left is as a whole.
I ask that because I read an article here not too awful long ago that it was about political correctness and how the country is starting to swing away from it. I mean, they're realizing that,
yeah,
that it's just craziness. It's not common sense. But it's interesting you say that that really hasn't been the case on college campuses.
Yeah, I think the reason why the American public are reacting to it, because, you know, at the very beginning, political correctness was, it was somewhat mild, but like all, you know, leftist ideologies, it continues to grow. And I think it's gotten to almost a critical mass where people are like, wait a second, that doesn't make sense. So, you know, the left is going to keep doing what they do, and our job is just to show people what the left is doing and let them make the determination for themselves. But I can say wholeheartedly with all the reactions that I've gotten from it, at least from people on the right, they're disgusted and horrified and ready to do something about it.
You know, nothing speaks louder than action, you know. So when things start to turn around, when things are getting done, and we kind of get things back on track, it's going to be pretty difficult for them to say that these are bad ideas.
Well, I'm hoping that as things start to shift and as people go back to work, as manufacturing comes back, which I truly believe it will, that maybe that ideology will start to soften a little bit, and they're going to look at it and go, hey, you know what, maybe this isn't so bad.
Any chance that's going to happen on a college campus?
I'd be doubtful, but I'd love to see it, though. Once I see it with my own eyes, then we'll go for it.
Well, we're going to consider you you're like our foreign correspondent, because, see, they're trying to do CalExit, so...
It truly is a foreign country.
Yes, you may literally become our foreign correspondent.
Well, I love it.
Please keep us updated with your work. And obviously, if you ever need to put a fan club on your resume, you can use us.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Thanks so much for having me. Hey, thanks for spending 2 hours with us this morning. I know everybody's life is hectic, but it went by fast. You did a great job.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks a whole lot. This was our guest, Peter Van Voorhis. He is a third-year student at UC Irvine, graduating this year. Go, Peter. And thanks for our sponsors, Powerhouse Solar. You guys have been listening to We the People Radio. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We have all the links we've spoken about, and the videos and things are on there from today's show.